Okay, I'm recording on November the 14th, isn't it? And I'm in the home of none other than Tony Ham Guerrero, whom I interviewed 12 years ago. So this interview is going to be a continuation of that splendid interview that we had 12 years ago.
It was a good one.
Yeah, it was. I don't know, I think the major topic that that I wanted to cover with you, and we sort of talked about it, and I said don't say anything until I start recording, was what happened to the orquestas? Seems to me that around 1980 or thereabouts, there was something happened. Am I wrong or right?
Just you're right, Steve.
Take it away from there.
I think, and I'm only going to use myself as a, because to be as factual as I can be, during, of course, you know, we started in 1973, La Tortilla.
La Tortilla, yeah.
It was a great band. Joe Gallardo, Dwayne Daniels, Ricky Reyes, Joe Medina, Big James Brown, Jaime Flores. All these guys, great musicians.
¿Cómo se llamaba el negro que tocaba con usted?
Bobby Butler, Charro Negro.
I think you told me when I interviewed you the last time that it was... Because I was in California and I heard about you guys, but never saw you perform.
Mm-hmm.
That you were all these batos locos, and then one negro, you know, in a was it a charro outfit?
Sí,
in a gleaming white or something like that.
Sí, sabes que we were all hippies. That's what it was, you know, long hair. See, in a continuation of the la familia thing.
Right.
We continued to be hippies with Tortilla, you know. Todavía usamos las cadenas y sandals locas y todo eso. You know. Patchouli, you know, that fragrance, the India.
Patchouli. I don't think I'd ever heard about that one.
Well, you know, it gave it kind of an exotic smell. ironically, as opposed to Isidro's band in the late 80s, or middle 80s, cuando vino San Angelo, pasé enfrente de la banda, y tú sabes, con las bandas, cuando van a tocar, pues se perfuman los guys, se echan y... Tú sabes, ¿cómo se dice? Cologne.
Cologne.
Smell good and all that. Pasaba enfrente de la banda y sí, y olía puro Bengue. Y le dije, Isidro, me dijo, sácate marrano, me dijo. we got a big kick out of that. Pero, no, we did use Idea Charro. We made the effort to, one of the guys in the band had connection to Mexico City. So un hombre le hizo dos trajes, uno de mariachi y uno de charro, que nos costaron $1,000 por cada traje. We were dead serious about making it. And, pues salía, you know, we would open with 2001 Space Odyssey Latin Jazz. I mean, knock the people out. Right after that, La Malagueña. Y salía charro, you know, bien vestido en medio de todos los hippies, and we would blow people's minds, you know. Y ya con la música, it was a total show. But it was a total musical show. We went to perform, and we went to give the people their money's worth.
Did you have lights, by the way, at that time? Or
no, but we had
and
the...
smoke, como le dicen ahora?
No, we didn't need it. We had the power, and we had the energy. The music alone was the show, you know. And then, of course, the visual effect. Traíamos también. Pero we did have about a $40,000 worth of sound system, which was one of the first.
Yeah, that's
we had a snake with a guy mixing way in the back, and he was like an old man. Que le hacía el sonido a Lawrence Welk when he was a young man, but he was always into electronics and studio. So se fue a San Angelo a vivir. Ahí lo conocí, and when he saw our band, he fell in love with it, and he provided the sound, you know, and it was a great thing. Pero
we're going to get to a lot of things, but as you talk, it brings things to my mind. This thing about the mixing of the sound y todo, was this something you picked up from the big bands, the rock bands? Weren't they using that kind of, like Woodstock and all that?
Well, yes. Well, actually, we were doing that way even before Little Joe got to the point where we were doing a lot of concerts on the West Coast. Con Azteca, Malo, Santana, and those people, right? And... he started investing in sound, you know, and it was way back since 1969, that we started on that thing. That's right, from where Woodstock came.
Yeah.
Pero we were always trying to get our music to sound better, and that was the reason for investing in sound equipment.
Here's another thing. I don't know if it was before I talked to you or maybe after I talked to you. I had a long talk with Gibby Escobedo and Oscar Lawson. You remember him? And Gibby was telling me that, at least as far as Latin Breed was concerned, but he felt that, that this was true of most of the Tejano bands, that you guys had been influenced to one degree or another by bands like Tower of Power and Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
No. Sure.
That there was some influence there, in addition to... Whatever.
There was a great deal of influence. Me, on a personal basis, I was always... I've been in love with Latin jazz and jazz itself. As a consequence, I would, the Tejano music, what you heard in our arrangements, was, I was influenced maybe by trumpet players, like, when I was a little kid, Harry James.
Yeah,
you told me. A lot of people don't know, but that white boy could really play the trumpet, man. He was one of the few white boys that could really play.
Well, he was very popular with Chicanos here, and I remember people...
You know, and then as time progressed on, and I started listening to Clifford Brown, Al Hurt, you know, and different trumpet players. I would never just go with one guy. I caught on from
and
a lot of people.
And synthesized from different...
And then the big bands influenced me a lot, you know, as Stan Kenton, Luis Alcaraz, you know, pa que te digo. So a lot of that, the Tejano musicians, this is important. Cuando de los discos que me enseñaste, you just played for me,
yeah,
they brought me. See, that's where it all really started. Los hermanos Compián, Chuy Compián, Pepe Compián, were really to me the initial impact on Tejano music.
Hang on, I want to make sure that this is you were talking about hermanos Compián.
Well, they see, to my knowledge, I don't know this for sure. Say the algo de la Orquesta Falcón, but I think they came much later. Los Compiánes were the first ones that really introduced un archivo a la orquesta, which was arrangements. And that upgraded, cuando Beto Villa empezó a tocar, Beto Villa no leía música. He didn't have to. He played his ass off.
Yeah.
Didn't have to. And he was so charismatic and such a great player that he attracted other great musicians.
Yeah.
And they came to him and they wrote his music for him, how he wanted it written.
Well, you may not know this, but in because later I got a lot of information from Beto Villa. He organized his first band in 1932.
Wow.
He was a high school student at the time, and he called it the Sunny Boys. So even in 1932, some Chicanos were already being influenced by the big bands de los Estados Unidos. And un señor que hace poco que murió se llamaba Rey Treviño. He played the piano accordion with Beto Villa in the early days, and he told me that he said that he remembered, he was around 1949 or 1950, he said Beto Villa made the band real big at that point in time. He decided to change everything. And those of us who couldn't read music, we were fired. That's what he told me. So he got rid of his brother, and that's when los Compianes and all those people started coming in.
And you know, that's ironic, because when I went to Little Joe's band, they weren't reading. As a matter of fact, you don't argue with success. They were very successful. However, their voicings on their horns were wrong. They would put the trumpet as a lead instrument, right? Well, it was on the bottom, and then the lead sax, the alto sax, would be playing the lead and the tenor in the middle. I guess it was kind of a mellow sound. It was okay, and it was happening. And you don't argue success. But as I started changing their concept of, in that band, you know, when I came into the band, I made an impact, and we decided to go with five horns. Then we put the trumpets on top,
right,
and the sexes for the bottom, the way it should be. And we would make the arrangements primitive. Hey, you take a B and I'll take a D and let's see what this sounds like. And to me, I was only a sideman, so I wouldn't say much, but finally it got to me. It was boring, time consuming, and I told Joe, we need arrangements, man. Let's get this stuff written out, you know. We can knock this arrangement out in 30 minutes. We took 5 hours to do that arrangement.
You told me that style of arranging, the como estaba diciendo, you take a B, I think, if I remember, you said era el estilo el oreja de elefante, the way you described it.
You know, it was funny, porque everybody had a great ear, and some knowledge of chords. Kazuske, everybody knew how to go and which direction. If they gave you a, let's say the major seventh, you take the major seventh all the way through until this measure.
Yeah.
And you knew what you were doing, but it was still, you know, primitive.
Right.
It's ironic that you say that about Beethoven's band, porque some of the guys in the band got mad at me when I said, let's start reading this stuff, because they didn't read. And then little Joe goes, so we need to, you think that's the way to go, Ham? Yeah. So we started doing arrangements. Saltaron músicos de repente, left and right. También, that's another thing that happened. That's why little Joe's became so good. And then Joe made these pues, we need a great band. You know, so then I got the great players.
That's me, right?
Gallardo and all these people, company. You know. And getting back to what was the original question?
Well, that we were talking about how there was a line that could be drawn from Beto Villa all the way, even though there was changes, obviously.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But something happens in the early 80s. It seems to me that in listening to the things that were happening, that some of the innovation that was so... You know, bursting at the seams in the 70s, this kind of...
Well, what happened?
And then today, of course, the big orchestras with the five horns, they're dinosaurs, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They don't necessarily have to be, but they are. And I think that, like I said, I was going to say what happened to Tortilla. Falcón, as you know, sold their entire catalog.
Who'd they sell it to?
Well, I know Huey Moe bought some, and then different people bought it. Manny Guerra sold some of his stuff.
Falcón doesn't exist anymore?
No.
I didn't know that.
Falcón no longer
Maybe
exists.
I should know it, but I didn't know it.
And when that happened, my contract was over with them. And I made a wrong move. I went to record an album for Freddie Martinez. And Lito, el hermano de Freddy, listened to the last album that I had done with Falcón. And I could, when he heard it, he heard how great it was. The album was a beautiful album, you know. And he turned and looked at me and he said, that'll never make it here. It's too good. It's too heavy. He said, I want you to do an album for us, and I want you to do it simple. And he goes, I'll try. None of the stuff that I like to do is simple. Maybe I'm wrong. They would just try. So I did two albums for them. One they released, ¿te acuerdas que Tony de la Rosa was there?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you were walking in the studio when I first met you.
That's right.
Him. And he recorded on that album with me. I don't know if you ever heard the album.
I don't think I did.
It was an honor for me to have recorded with him. And he came in, and I asked him, and he came in and played his butt off, man, over the trumpets and with the accordion, and that was really, I could see he was digging the hell out of it,
yeah.
And I was eating it up, you know, it was a beautiful encounter, you know. To make a long story short, the album that I did for them was, to me, was a dog. The only thing that I thought was great was Tony's appearance on it and the two or three songs that he did with me. That I'll cherish forever. I think the rest of the album was me trying to be something I wasn't. As a consequence, I went back and did another one for them. They never released it. I don't know what happened to that album. That was the end of Tortilla Factory 1982 for the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Not in personal appearances, because we would play 3-4 months out of the year, and then I would do something else, and then... They see each other, hey, let's play for a while. Okay, so we can go play for a while. So sporadically tocamos, no? Pero in 1979 is when it happened that I lost interest. I saw a little group called the Mafia, 1980, 81. Apenas estaban empezando. And I saw these two young kids, you know, with long hair, singing, and a bunch of little girls out there in front of the band, you know, and then they're swinging their butts at the girls and pretty boys, but they're musically, they couldn't play their way out of a paper bag.
Yeah.
They were horrible. And I said, if this is any indication of where Tejano music is going, I don't want to be part of it.
Was it an indication of where it was going?
Well, it was prophetic because they happened to be the biggest act for the next 5-6 years.
Yeah, they were big.
They were very big. And now they've matured, and this music is still sucks, but they do the cumbias, and they're big stars now.
Aren't they from Chicago?
No, son de aquí, de Houston.
Which is the group that's from Chicago?
La Sombra.
La Sombra.
And anyway,
Mafia is from Houston. You're absolutely right.
So anyway, to make a long story short, then I heard Mas coming around, and Mas.
When did they start? I might eventually get around to interviewing them, but they're kind of those new groups are kind of at the periphery of what I'm doing because I don't consider them to be the old-fashioned orchestras.
They're not. They
there's something that evolved out of that or something.
I call them the new boys on the block. To me, Mas, ahorita todavía, they're. De todos esos grupos que cuando se acabaron las orquestas,
yeah.
De los grupos que continuaron, to me they are the best one of its kind.
Mas. I've heard some of their music and it's interesting, but not.
It's
no
not.
Se compara con, you know, Latin Breed,
no.
Power Drive album, or Tortilla Factory, some of the stuff you guys put out. It's just not in the same league.
No, it's not. It's simple, it's pretty music, it's country music. Tejano music went from being a class act.
Well, let me ask you the key
totally
question
country.
Here, Tony, and I want you to explore in your mind. Why the change?
I think that about every 12 to 15 years, cambia la onda. Now, there was a time from where Beto Villa had such an impact that we couldn't change.
Well, it changed, but for the better, it seems to me. This time
it changed
for the
worse.
Worse.
Oh, yeah, it's horrible. Today, you listen to some of the groups from San Antonio, or 95% of the groups from San Antonio. I'm excluding the Latin Breed, okay? The Latin Breed continue to have today, only until Gibby that I said this, only because I'm not around. They're the top band.
Well, Ruben Ramos still plays a little bit like the old. It's simple, but it's... It still is, I guess, you know, an old style orquesta.
Well, they're one of the traditional orquestas tejanas that has survived.
It's like the one single icon from the old.
They've survived the Holocaust.
They survived just as like an example of what it used to be like.
Exactly. And I attribute that to Ruben having the show that he does. And they're hardworking. They got a lot of showmanship. And they believe in their cause. They believe in keeping la onda.
Yeah, I interviewed him and he told me, hey, I'm going to play this stuff. If you no les gusta, then I'll just go do something else.
Exactly. And I'm really proud of Ruben because he has kept it. To me, when I see that, you know, there's still a glimmer of hope for la onda tejana.
Would you ever play with him if he invited you and if you know, for whatever reason, weren't playing the salsa anymore?
Oh, sure. Sure, man. I love all those guys. As a matter of fact, his trumpet player, Gabachito Guitra, Jimmy Shortell.
Yeah.
I started him in La Onda.
Hombre.
And my last year with La Tortilla Factory, we met and I got him in the band and he learned it and he loved Tejano music.
And
he's a great jazz trumpet player.
Yeah.
But he lived with us for a year.
He lived with us for a year, but he went over and worked. And he told me, he said, you know, I've been asked to play with the Mexican Revolution. Like, ¿sabes qué, Jimmy? Like, my heart's not in this anymore. Now you have all my blessings. As a matter of fact, it's a great band for you to go with. You want to make a living. Those guys make a good living, you know. So, se fue. Little Joe, Ruben Ramos.
Yeah, but Little Joe is only a shadow of... His band is only a shadow of what it was in the 70s. I mean...
Yeah.
He gave me some of his music, and it's good, but it's not... doesn't have the...
He lost it.
Pizzazz.
You know,
Does age have anything to do with it?
No. No, I think that Joe lost a lot of a lot of himself when he lost Johnny, his brother. When he
Can
lost,
you tell me what happened between those two? Was it just the falling out, or
it was
what
just?
Happened?
Well, you know, I walked in 5 minutes before it happened because we were playing together. Little Joe had a club in Pasadena called Little Joe's back in 1984, and Johnny had just. They had just had a... Alegaron de algo. Se enojaron. I think Joe was on one of his ego trips, you know. Pues yo canto más y tú cantas menos. You know. Y Johnny le dijo, pues, last night I only sang 3 songs the whole night. ¿Para qué estoy aquí, you know? Y le dijo, Joe, well, you might only sing 2 tonight. Digo, Johnny, pues ahí te miro. after 25 years, right?
Yeah. They always sounded good together, though, the duet.
It was, that's what made that act, Las Voces.
Duet together.
That's what made the act. That's what exactly made the act. And after, see, Joe has never given me credit because when I left his band, hubo mucho rencor.
Well, you took a lot of your musicians with you, didn't you?
Well, see, that's a false thing. What happened was I quit the band originally. I had given my week notice, a month notice, as a matter of fact. He made me go, Joe, when you leave on your own, man, go on in your own name. It was an amicable thing, you know. And then him and Joe Gallardo couldn't stand each other. They said, Joe Gallardo, I hate these little bitty band leaders, cabrones. Those, they got that Napoleon syndrome. Those getting mucho power, you know. And so they had this thing back and forth, you know. Little Joe with his fame and his money and his power, and Joe Gallardo with his
talent.
With his talent, which is, you know, the guy is a genius. And they couldn't stand each other. And so, as a consequence, Joe Gallardo had a lot of influence in the band. And I had more influence in the band than he did because of the time I had actually formed that group for Little Joe, no? When I said, I'm going back home to San Angelo, Joe Gallardo made me go, hey, well, we heard Little Joe's going to fire us anyway. He's going to fire the whole band. But he doesn't know that we know. So the whole band quit in Beeville. Which was it? June 17th or something, 1973. Somewhere around there.
You know, there's a paradox there, because you guys were riding the peak of your fame at the time, as that particular group. Para La Gente had just been out for a year or so, and it was still, you know, taking the Chicano storm.
It was terrible. It was terrible that happened. But that band broke up because of greed and because of egomania. As the power. It was a power struggle. And now that I think about it and look back, I think it was mainly as the too many egos involved. Had Little Joe been more down to earth with us, and had he said, well, if I make it all the way, man, everybody's going to make it. It wasn't like that anymore. From that moment on, as a matter of fact, up to that point, nos encontrábamos las orquestas tejanas on the road, carnales, man, you know. I mean, bros to the max. We'd party together, we'd drink together, nos peleábamos, and the next morning, we'd have fist fights. This is a true story. La banda de Roy Montelongo y la banda de Little Joe nos agarramos a reatazos en un hotel room in San José una noche. Over a dice game.
Really?
Nos agarramos a regatazos. Right, this is honest to God truth, man. Lencho Ramírez, uno de los trompetistas que era originally de Alfonso, andaba tocando con Roy Montelongo. Y Raymond Flores, trompetista de Little Joe. Dos pachucones, uno de Austin y uno de Odessa. Estaban jugando Dallas y we were all there. And somebody threw, you know, a seven and reached down and grabbed all the money. And he was grabbing all the money. Here comes a fist flying, pow. And all of a sudden, man, you know, a little bitty room. And now, 12 vatos matándose ahí, you know. And the funny thing about it was the next morning, andamos tomando café and laughing about it. But it was true friendship. And there were no wimps. There were no, ¿cómo se dicen? This is a bad word to use, pero Roy Montelongo describes the guys that make it in La Onda today, como jotitos. They say, mira nomás, you know, long hair, shaking their butts, no music, you know. This is a different trip, and in those days, we were more manly, I guess. I don't know.
Eran vatos locos ustedes.
Sí, you know. What broke, there is, from the moment that we broke up, esa banda que se quebró la familia. Later on, it continued for a while, because Latin Reed and our band continued to be great friends. We would tour all over Texas. En veces tocamos con Agustín Ramírez, and there was still that friendship, in spite of Agustín being a Neanderthal, cabrón. You know? We had a lot of, there was real friendship. Si llegabas tarde and your equipment wasn't set up, hey, that's okay, use my stuff. Si alguien le faltaba algo, well, everybody would go out of the way to see, make sure that would happen, no? And ya no hay nada de eso. Towards the end of the 70s, se comenzó a acabar todo eso friendship. You find it every now and then, you know, como los Erratas. I run into those guys, man, especially La Palomilla del Valle, those guys don't change.
Roberto Pulido, is he pretty?
Those guys are all beautiful people, man. Those some like, down in the valley, there might be some egos, pero the true camarada, the carnalismo, is still alive in the valley. In San Antonio, it stops. And the farther north you go, the worse it gets, you know. I'll give you a good example. Una noche fuimos a tocar a San Antonio towards the end of my career with Tortilla. Y something happened. Somebody got there late. And we couldn't sit up because they had half of the equipment. Jimmy Edwards had set up his stuff. Y mandé a Charro que le preguntara a Jimmy if it was around, we could use their stuff. Y vino Charro y me dijo, yeah, it's cool, man. Let's get started. So we opened the show for Jimmy. And that was in itself humbling because Tortilla Factory we opened the show for nobody. Everybody used to open up for us. But we got mellower, me and Charro, as time went by. And I told Charro, let's forget it, you know. We had a better band anyway. So when we played, at the end of the night, we didn't make very much between both bands. I think we made like $500 a piece. And when they brought me my money, it was $125 short. And I said, ¿qué pasó con este? And then Jimmy Edwards made a comment to the effect that, well, hey, man, now it's a dog-eat-dog world. Everybody's on his own. I'm charging you for using my stuff. You know, just like that. And I had always been so close with Jimmy. And dije yo, bueno, pues I guess the world has changed. And those were some of the things that kept pushing me farther and farther away. Manny Guerra owed me hundreds of thousands of dollars in royalties. I didn't really want to talk about this because there are so many good things to remember about La Onda.
Yeah.
Pero the big bands started dying because of those things, the producers. The guys who treated me the best were Falcon. They used to pay me a lot of money to record. And they treated me, they were a first class act, Falcon was. They were a top class act. They were the CBS de La Onda Tejana. They were the Colombian.
Yeah.
They were the greatest, you know. Señor Ramirez, Nano. Oh, sure, I had my differences with them. But when it came to paying, they paid.
Let me ask you this. Did an advanced technology have anything to do with that in terms of the introduction of those, I guess they call them now samplers? You know, that electronic music. Others have told me that it came to the point where you could bring four musicians and create almost the same sound. Well, not almost, but a big sound. And you could pay four musicians instead of 10. Did that happen?
See, a lot. It even affected the studios in L.A. Some of the greatest musicians in the world moved to Europe during those days that you're talking about because of samplers, because of synthesizers that would produce string sounds, trumpets, trombones.
Yeah.
You had one guy doing that. That kind of electronics put musicians in the tens of thousands out of work. But now it's coming, was a fad that lasted and it hurt everybody, like disco, for example.
Well, I think it's an outgrowth of disco in a sense.
Yeah, Ahora, ironically, isn't there a band called Tierra Tejana still happening?
Yeah, they come in and out, I think.
They're big with,
let me tell you something. Some of the younger musicians have told me that the big labels came into the picture again, you know.
See.
Sony apparently took over for a lot of people, and then Capitol, EMI, most of these, you know, La Mafia, Maz, and all these other groups are recording for these big labels now. And apparently, they seem to have an idea of what Tejano music is supposed to sound like, and it's a synthesized sound.
And unfortunately.
There's a young man in Houston who plays with a group called Latin Image. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
In fact, they played here last night in Austin. Uh-huh. He says, if we try to bring some innovation, the producer will say, no, don't do that. You know, we want you to do this. So they seem to be locked in to a particular sound that the producers think is what Tejano music is.
Right. You know, Johnny Hernandez and Armando and Little Joe recently did an album for Capitol, which was very well done. But when I heard it, he's doing what we were doing back with La Familia, which, if you want to call it a generation music, you can if you want to. I just call it good music. But see, that music that Johnny's doing with violins, the orchestra, I thought it's beautiful. I don't know if you've heard it or not.
I haven't heard Johnny's music, no, I haven't.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's very well recorded, professionally done. That music doesn't go over anymore. Neither with the producers nor the radio DJs. Unfortunately, Tejano has come total mediocrity.
So what would happen today if somebody came out with an album or, you know, that featured music like La Malagueña, just the way you did it, and Las Nubes, that sort of thing? What would happen? It wouldn't work?
I don't think so.
This is the cultural center. I want you to do that.
Well, I was coming to that. I'm fixing to do something that has never been done before. It's the Juan Tejeda.
Yeah, he's my friend. In fact, I was with him last night.
Okay, Juan Tejeda and I gave him an idea about a year ago. I'm going to write a classical as the score on this history of música tejana. And I'm going to use the top cats in the world to do it. But I'm going to do it in the sense that I don't give a damn what, there's no fat cat producer that's going to tell me how to write my music or write it or arrange it and even produce it, because I'll find a way to do it. Música tejana, I'm going to go back, I'm going to use French horns, I'm going to use violins, I'm going to find somebody that's into the arts, the theater, and we're going to do a history of it in the real sense of the word. This is why I have been thinking about you a lot, you know, because that I made a move to salsa doesn't make a difference in the world, man. I come from the barrio Chicano Tejano.
Salsa music is exciting music, too.
Well, see, here's the thing. I saw all Latin breed, to me, is, they're like, como te diré, it's the Lawrence Taylor, the Lenefield, one of these durable linebackers. No, they continue to have a great band.
And they're almost like the last of the Mohicans.
And they're very, well, you know what, they might just sobrevivir todo esto. They might just survive the Holocaust, because the last time I heard them, they were kicking ass. And the people that were there, that were playing at a club in San Antonio when I saw them, the people were dancing their ass off. They were loving every minute of it. And it was just like if you had just walked into the 70s, and it was San Antonio, no? Yeah. And they were loving the big brass, everything. And they sounded beautiful. Now, where they have maintained that thing, and they keep going with it, they might just overlive, because people today listen to music with their eyes. You want to know what really changes the Onda Tejana? In the bottom line, MTV.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
MTV changed it. That's why La Mafia salida and vestidos ahí with their tight black pants and long hair. And people started listening with their eyes.
Somebody told me that these days, unless you get a video along with your album, it's not going to work. That you need a video too, you know.
It's true. It's very true. Of course it is. Because times have changed rapidly. There are, to me, I don't know, you know, I consider you an authority on this a hell of a lot more than me, but because you're a musician as well, you listen, and if you listen to all the bands in San Antonio, can you really tell them apart? Can you really, really tell them apart?
I haven't been to San Antonio that much, but...
Okay, Emilio Navaira, David Ligarza. There's a band called River City Band.
I've got to be very frank with you. Those groups bore me after about 3 or 4 songs.
Well, that's what I mean. They all sound the same. They all sound the same.
I hate to say this, Tony, but I can only listen to about 15 minutes of it, and it just bores the hell.
I have always said that the only policy in music is honesty. Si no puedes, la verdad es la verdad. Se terminó the excitement. We used to open up with Malagueña. We had timpani. Yeah. A guy playing timpani in the band.
As a musician, and hopefully one who understands, I mean, I have a BA in music after all, and I look back and I see, and I even at the time I knew that what you guys were doing was great, was really historic. And I think more than most people, it sort of breaks my heart to see what happened to Tejano.
It's very sad. You know what, Doctor, at that point, I was full of dreams. You know, I had a big dream for Tortilla Factory. I wanted to take it where no Tejano band had ever been. And I wanted to take it with the, con el, como se dice, con un impacto tremendo mundial. Because we had top, you know, Joe Gallardo's another Quincy Jones. He's considered one of the greatest in the world, you know. And we had all that at our disposal. Pero unfortunately, economics had a lot to do with it. Economics is, you know, the record companies.
The record companies. Well, go ahead with that point. Well,
Manuel Guerra is a pioneer in the music industry. He has helped, let me put it this way. He's a very smart businessman, probably the smartest in La Onda. He has recorded groups that have made it and has never paid one penny in royalties.
Sounds like Armando Marroquín.
You know.
The old man that I was telling you about, Raymond Treviño, who recorded with Beto Villa, he told me once, Armando Marroquín no le quería pagar a nadie nada. And that's how they made it, because they cheated the musicians and
those kinds of things. En La Onda Tejana, you know, I have had people. El otro día fui a San Antonio, and I went to... fuimos a hacerle un concierto, un benefit concert a Isidro López, because he's fighting the state of Texas for his land.
Le
quieren quitar el indio.
Oh, yeah.
Quiere pasar por ahí, le quieren dar un... cualquier cosa por su... Sí, and he's fighting, and so we went to raise money to help him. Juan Tejeda was the one that coordinated that thing. Tocó unos grupos del Valle, Alfonso Ramos, and Little Joe, and Johnny. Well, Little Joe didn't show up, but Johnny did. And then I introduced my salsa band that night. It was funny porque we were right in the middle of Chicano country, in el barrio, tocando salsa, and everybody was smiling and digging the hell out of it. They just didn't know how to dance it. And they appreciated it, you know. What I was trying to say was, getting back to Manny, the thing that he did as a smart businessman was that he recorded us and never paid us. And it wasn't so much Manny's fault as it was our own.
Yeah.
I didn't know any better. I didn't know any better than to tell him, hey, I want to get paid for this.
You were having fun.
Too much fun. And I was still at the age of 30. I think I was 30 years old when I recorded my first album, The Tortilla Factory. I was still stupid and naive. He told me, come on, man, te voy a grabar y te voy a ser más famoso que nunca. And I believe that. And it did happen in a way, because we made a lot of money. Pero what about the thousands and thousands of dollars of royalties? Mira, Roberto Pulido, the Latin Reed. I don't know what relationship tiene Gibby con Manny. If it's good or bad, no sé. But there's another guy that was milked.
Come?
He was milked. Jimmy Edwards was milked. Now, he's milking Sonny again. And so you see...
Poor Sonny, I mean, that's one guy that really went down the drain in a way.
And you know...
He was lost in the shuffle, apparently, He was working at Wynn's in San Antonio. There was a big write-up in a paper that ese muchacho Pete Rodriguez, que tío que trabaja con Manny... You know, he gave me copies of all the stuff and how Manny had said, you know, it broke my heart to see Sonny working at Wynn, so I decided I was going to bring him back from obscurity. And, you know, he put him back on the road again, I guess. And
well, those are nice thoughts.
But I don't know if he was doing it for him or because he thought maybe I can make some more money out of
Well, see, at the point that when we did the first album, The Tortilla Factory, which was... one of the greatest albums ever done in La Onda, if not the greatest.
Which one was this?
El primer album.
Is that the one that has La Malagueña?
La Malagueña.
Yeah, that's a classic.
You know, that's that album.
I don't have that song. I wish I had it.
Do we have it? Had
you didn't have it when I was here 12 years ago. You said, I don't have it.
I still don't have it.
No,
I think
it is. Somebody says,
I'd get my right arm to get a copy of that song.
Bueno, ese album...
If I ever do a historical CD, I want to include that song.
Ese album... Sold.
That was with Manny?
With Manny Guerra.
Well, he'd be the person we'd have. I'm sure that Chris would have he'd probably drive a pretty hard bargain to allow us to record any of that music.
Chanza que Huey Moe lo tenga, because I remember he bought a lot.
He'd drive a pretty hard bargain too, I'm sure.
Right. Pero lo que pasó ahí fue que... Eso, mira, in a nutshell, compañías... Y yo no sé cuánto dinero... Yo sé en un tiempo que Freddy a mí me pagó... por lo que yo grabé, Freddy Martinez. It wasn't the right kind of money. Falcon was the only company that really treated me in the right sense of the word, in the business sense. On the other hand, we sold albums, a lot of albums. So it was a mutual business partnership, you know. Pero Los Manny Guerras, and all the other producers that produce so many acts, destroyed the Tejano band. We had nothing to fall back on, because si nos faltaba una van, o si nos faltaba algo, sound equipment, microphones, we didn't have nobody to go to. We had to get it on our own. And sometimes los bailes would click, sometimes they wouldn't.
What do you think would have happened if, this is just a hypothetical question, and maybe it's worthless, but, you know, Sony and Capitol especially have been very, very active in the last 8 years, 9 years in Tejano music. If those people had entered the picture, say, in the early 70s instead of the 80s.
Oh, God, it would have been tremendous. It would have been, I think that the bands that didn't continue on in the 80s, the big bands, those big bands right now would be traveling worldwide.
I mean, look at the...
Because they have worldwide distribution.
Look at El Album, which I guess even you, I think, characterized it as a monstrous album, Para la Gente.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and that was local. That was just Little Joe's company, right?
Yeah.
If that had been handled by a Capitol or a Sony...
That album would have taken off worldwide. Pero, unfortunately, it didn't happen. No. Don't be surprised. I wouldn't be. If sometime in the near future, some young kids come out with a big bad band, you know. I remember the DJs and...
Are the musicians there? Is there a pool of musicians?
There's some young kids coming up that really play well. But here's something else that's important that you should know. Some of the musicians that were in the Latin Reed, the Tortilla Factory, Little Joe, the big, big bad bands, those guys are into jazz or salsa now. They went on to bigger challenges, yeah, too, because their musicianship carried them there.
Yeah.
They, you know, would you believe I haven't listened to Tejano radio in 5 years? There's nothing for me to listen to.
I can believe that. I mean, I've been listening to it because I have to, just to keep track of what's going on. And like I said, I hate to admit it, Tony, but I get bored after about 15, 20 minutes of listening to it.
You know, another thing that killed La Onda, as it really was, acuérdate, los 60s and los 70s, I mean, the kings, the real kings, okay? Tony de la Rosa. Let's start, because they are such a big part.
That was the other onda, the other part of the other tributary of Tejano music.
Well, I always considered them. To me, they were my heroes: Paulino Bernal, Tony de la Rosa, Narciso Martinez. These guys to me were badasses. That's all I can tell you.
Did you ever hear Los Buenos cuando andaba Oscar?
Sí, cómo no.
Oh, they put out some nice music.
And they still do. No. Are they still?
Well, here? I don't. The Serratas, they're very talented, and I guess they keep going from one group to another. Oscar has his own little group in Dona, in McAllen, called the Tough Band.
Oh, see.
I don't know if you ever heard of them, but.
No.
Oscar has never been able to sell himself. You know, he's just, I guess he's a musician's musician, and you know how it is with those people. Either.
See, we borrowed Little Joe and his in Orquesta Los Músicos, even the toughest guys, they had the heaviest players, sax players, whatever. We would listen to some of the stuff that Tony and Arosa would do on the accordion. Hey, let's use that lick, man.
Adapted to the
press. See, it was all give and take.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. Another thing that destroyed La Onda Tejana to a certain degree and brought it down to the mediocrity that has become fue esta gente that put together the Tejano Awards stuff.
Yeah, tell me about that.
That stuff, yeah, to me was an insult, because they tried to make it under sort of the concept of the Grand Ole Opry. To me, I see it at a parallel, mm-hmm, because of the way they exploit it or promote it. Pero, where are the real kings of the Tejano sound? Where are they? They've never been there. Let's get back to the basics. ¿Dónde está Isidro? Nunca lo han presentado ahí. He's the father de la onda.
Yeah.
You know, and before him was, or him or Beto Villa. Beto Villa, of course, deceased.
Beto Villa started it, but Isidro gave it a quantum leap forward.
Exactly. And
then Little Joe and Sonny came and gave it another quantum leap forward.
Exactly. And then Latin Breed and Tortilla.
Right. You can see those leaps going forward.
Exactly.
You know?
And every time it was better.
Every time it was better than the last time around.
Exactly. That's why I pride myself so much in the Orquesta Tejana de la Tortilla. If you really closely listen to the recordings that we made, there was the only album that got close to it, or almost at a parallel of any other band, was Para la Gente.
Yeah.
the first off the album that we did, Teníamos Somos Novios, La Malagueña, some of the greatest.
I have some of the stuff, but from another album that came later that's just as good, and maybe not just, but it's great. It's and I've got it on a tape that I have a tape that I like to play on my car. It's kind of like my own little history of Tejano music, where I have the conjunto tradition on one side, how it develops, and then I have the orchestra. Just pieces that I like. There's no particular, but I have a couple of things from Tortilla Factory.
A couple of years ago, or a year and a half ago, I heard the Latin Breed record a new album, and that album is a monster album. It is a monster album. Today it sounds like a band of the 70s, pero not really. The music is so beautiful and so heavy. That's why I'm saying these guys are continuing forward, and I hope they continue. Mediocrity doesn't last. Somewhere along the way, somebody's going to come and upgrade this thing. And I don't know if it will happen soon. I hope it happens again, because our culture is so rich and so beautiful.
The thing about what you were doing in the 70s, especially, that the gente seemed to be with you.
Sí.
I mean, there was no such thing as, this is too complicated for the people. It seems like they still appreciated, you know.
Exactly.
Because a lot of the albums are done, well, you know, you have to play simple stuff for the people, because they... But it seems to me in the 70s, you played complicated stuff, and it's still... You should have to cater to the lowest common denominator, which is apparently what people are doing now.
Well, you know, otra cosa también, and you asked me this, and I never have really quite answered it. To my knowledge, cuando entraron los synthesizers, it's true. You only needed four guys. However, you needed a sound system that cost them thousands of dollars. $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. Because a synthesizer can only do so much. But with that enhancement of electronics, feeling grande, no? And it...
Too big for my ears.
Put trumpets out of work, saxes out of work. Well, no, the sax continued to predominate.
There's one or two.
One or two, yeah.
Sometimes you know.
And they play horrible. The young kids of today, man, they're terrible.
Yeah, they don't have a concept of the...
See, in the old days, when my band, or Lil Joe's band, or Sonny's band, or any of those bands, you would get any one musician of that band that would walk out of playing a Tejano gig, go to an after-hours club, and sit in and play hardcore jazz. They were such masters at their instruments. I'm talking about masters, man. You have guys like Luis Bustos, man, one of the greatest musicians I've ever known in my life. You know... The total complete musician, played Tejano music for a living, and went and played till 5 in the morning for free just to get his cookies off. Charlie McBurney, another great trumpet player out of San Antonio. Sauce, Arturo Gonzalez, his pianista, you know, just gifted people. You know what I'm talking about? You don't find that in La Onda Tejana today. You have guys playing with two fingers, you know? And so, as a consequence, the music sounds like that.
Those great musicians date back all the way to the days of Beto Villa, don't they? I mean, there were guys there that...
And those guys were heavier than us. I'm serious. Because I can't really sit down and write a score out of un guion, mm-hmm. una score, como el Montito Chuy Pompian, which was the guy that started it all, ahí con Beto Villa, you know? Pepe Pompian's brother wrote some beautiful arrangements.
Well, there were other people besides them that were very...
Sí, claro que sí. You know,
I'm... Galvanes and Corpus Christi.
Los Galvanes, that's true. They were... estos hombres, yo creo...
René Sandoval.
René Sandoval, who
he got to start way back then. I've seen pictures of him as a youngster playing with Beto Villa. And other people.
You know, these guys are really, really great. And,
Do you ever know Homero Salinas?
Oh, yeah, man.
The trumpet player who's now a judge. And
sí,
he was quite a trumpet player in his day.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he was tremendous, yeah. Well, you know,
I knew him personally because he lived in Mercedes and I lived in West Laco.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I got in at the tail end with some of the... You probably never heard of Eugenio Gutierrez. I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
He played with Eugenio. Eugenio recorded for Falcón. And in fact, there's a recording of Eugenio there. And that... But we played together. I was playing guitar on that day.
Wow.
Just struggling young guitar player.
La Orquesta Falcón empezó allí around that time, no?
Yeah.
Homero was part of that.
I don't know if he was, but he did play with Eugenio Gutierrez.
Okay. Homer Salinas, man.
Había otro trompetista en el Valle que se llamaba Luis Johnston, who was also very, very good. But he was not as well known as Homero Salinas.
I see. Well, you know, ahorita lo que está pasando... There's nothing any of us can do, because this stuff is selling.
Yeah, it is selling.
And
they're promoting it very hard. I mean, you put a station that plays 26 songs, over, como dijo René Ornelas, they play it over and over. And he said people, even in spite of themselves, after a while they're going to get used to that music and they start buying it.
Here's what happened to me in a sense, but when I saw this stuff happening, I opened a nightclub here in town. I didn't want to play on the road anymore. That's when me and Charro did the last album in 87, and I was tired of Bobby, and he was tired of me, and we were tired of everything. So later on, I'm going to give you an album to take home with you. It's the album of Grabamos, and I did some things that I always had wanted to do. And being that it was my final statement in La Onda, I did it the way I wanted to.
Yeah.
Whether it didn't sell because Joey Lopez didn't promote it. Had he promoted it. Charro and I were onto something, and it was happening, man. I'll tell you how bad it got. It's going to blow your mind. I picked up the phone one morning. I was dying of boredom in San Angelo, and my wife, and I kept telling her, you know, we need to move. This isn't, you know, I'm dying a slow death. I want to play. I can't in San Angelo. It's a little cow town in the middle of nowhere. And they go, well, let's move somewhere, you know. And then right at that time, ofrecieron un trabajo allá.
No.
To teach here in Austin. And I said, wow, what an opportunity, you know. Because she's been bankrolling me, man.
Hey, when I was here, my wife bankrolled me for 3.5 years.
She's been bankrolling me for longer than that. Because music is such a hard thing, you know. Le telefoné a Joey López y le dije...
Time and her feast in music.
Le dije, Joey, habla Ham. ¿Y qué pasó, Ham? Le dije, pues yo, Charro, queremos grabar un LP. Y si pega, el LP, we're going to go back on the road from a tortilla, full time. Because we kept on sporadically working, ¿no? Le dije, hey, man, I'd love to record la tortilla. Le dije, órale, pues... pues no tengo feria, mato. Le dijo, pues ¿qué necesitas? Le dije, pues una feria. Y no, pues yo no le voy a pagar a los músicos para que grabe. You have to get the music. Digo, I'll put out the album. Le dije, bueno, y para mí, le dije, yo quiero 5,000 lanas en el álbum. Digo, bueno, digo, pues ahí vamos a hablar. That 87, and I still not even enough to believe him. Órale. So, I came to San Antonio. Nos vinimos yo y el Charro with just enough gas money to get there.
¿Dónde estaba el Charro?
Charro was in San Angelo. We were still working together. Nos vinimos to San Antonio. We just barely made it with the gas money. We didn't have a place to stay. And I thought that when I get there, that tomamos was $300-$400 a Joy. So we slept in the car the first 2 nights when Joy was out of town. We had no money to eat. Y le telefono, so, I had my charts, man. You know, I had my charts written. So I got to the studio, and the studio was set up and ready to go. And Charro se enfermó, pobre del estómago, because he had a drinking problem, you know. And he had to eat some kind of 4 or 5 square meals a day for the time of the estómago, you know. And so, to make a long story short, there I was, ready to do an album, nomás yo y Charro, without a band. I bluffed my way to the studio. And at that point, that's when I found out how much respect and love I had for the musicians. I picked up the phone. Yeah, primero que la voy a Sauce, le dije, Sauce, I'm in town, man. I need some help. Well, what do you need? I said, well, I need a piano player. No, que yo no toco música tejana, chicana.
¿Quién era Sauce?
Sauce, Arturo González,
oh.
Piano player. And... dije, bueno, ni modo. At that moment, Ricky Reyes, el tamborista de Little Joe, that worked with Sobe Tortilla,
yeah.
Entró, hey, carnal, entró componiendo a los antiguitos. ¿Qué pasó, Jim? ¿Qué andas haciendo? Dije, well, I'm trying to put a band together. And then I ran it down to him. Estamos llevando aquí, we don't have no money. And well, I got the music, but I don't have a band. Y él dijo, pues, ¿sabes qué? Dijo, I'm free for a week. And le dije, pues, you want to record an album with me? Dijo, yeah. So I got him, and then le hablé a
Ricky Reyes, was he the one who played sax or drums?
Drums. Then I got some of the guys that I had contacted that were going to help me, Aquino, in Austin. And when I ran it down to everybody, musicians, all the musicians, everybody said, Ham, if you're going to do an album, I want to be involved in it. You have to play me a damn thing. It'll be a challenge. All right. Well, that was a band. And it wound up, I wound up using four of the best drummers today in La Onda. But this has only been like 5 years ago. Ricky Reyes, Sarge Salas, Richard Solis, and Steve Solis. These guys are like, right there in a nutshell, that's it, La Onda Tejana. These guys are like phenomenal players. They're still the top, mm-hmm. You know. On guitar, let's say Joe Romano. Snaggle too, le digo porque le falta un diente, cabrón. Snag, todos dicen snag. A very gifted guitar player, you know, he could play with anybody in the world. That's how great he is.
Who does he usually play with?
Ahorita anda con Adalberto.
By the way, that band broke up recently.
I didn't know.
Adalberto went back to Tucson. I don't know what happened, but he was supposed to play for a wedding of all things in Houston. I have a friend that I knew, and the bride-to-be called him about 2 weeks just to make sure, you know, to confirm. They don't know, he broke up the band, and he went back to Tucson. So that band is defunct right
sad,
now.
Sad, you know. Well, anyway, this guy, so here I am. Nobody had any money. I gave nobody any money, and they weren't expecting any. So that, to me, was really, really moving.
Yeah.
You know, and they got Charo, God damn it, Charo. Do you realize how much these guys really love us? You know. Yeah, Bill Sullivan said, let's record the damn album. So we did the album, and thanks to Joey, he never gave us a penny. We survived on our own somehow. And todos los músicos that went to the studio did it because it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Playing great Tejano music, which was non-existent in 97, 87.
Yeah.
It was no longer. Right. But we did a badass album, which you're going to hear after a while.
Yeah, bring it out.
You know, that album was done like that. And then because of the brotherhood and things, that really, at that point, dije yo, dije al Charo, Charo, something wrong. Dijo Charo, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. Dije, I don't either. So we broke up. And at that point, right at that point, Manuel, I saw, because I was in San Antonio in the heart of Chicano Tejano music scene,
right.
I couldn't help but seeing what was going on, because it took me 2 weeks to do the album. Y ahí andaba viendo yo alrededor lo que estaba pasando. Y comencé a ver for the first time in years what the Tejano scene was like. Tejano bands, great musicians, playing only for the money, because they have to pay the bills and live somehow, playing Tejano music that sounded all the same like all the other bands, and then playing cumbias mexicanas. They call them slow cumbias.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm proud as hell and I'm starving, but I'll never, never do that for a living. You know, because music is too important to me. So I moved. Aquí estamos en Austin viviendo. My wife was paying the bills. She still is. We opened a nightclub, and that's when I really, really fell in love again with my trumpet, because I started playing with Tony Campisi, one of the world's greatest sax players. He's right here in town. Some of these badass musicians, they walk in there, and they're burning, you know, just pow, you know, like you see guys in New York, L.A., that great, of that level.
That caliber.
Such another level that some people, you know, you'd have to bring in Vanessa Noval or those cats. All of a sudden, there I am again in my
element.
Hijo de la chingada, in my element, you know what I'm saying? And it was like I was reborn. And then, there I am, and I'm happy again, and I'm in music. And then all of a sudden, we started running this club. It started off as jazz and Latino. And all of a sudden, all these damn Puerto Ricans and Cubans started coming in there. And me and my wife were having a tremendous amount of fun. with a culture shock, you know. Yeah. The music took over. The music, it just brought, because I was dead for a long time, 7 or 8 years. And then as I saw my brothers regressing in their musical abilities, tocando cumbias y morero, I said, well, this Tejano is going forward. And right now, I'm taking my Tejano emotions and feelings and heart and my instincts to another level. Instead of me going back and conforming, I want to take my music, because soy Tejano, and I want to take you, and I want to take anybody that's part of my life, along with my salsa. Because, como te dijo Norma anteriormente, I'm doing something los Puerto Ricanos don't do. I'm going back and looking for material de Isidro López, the stuff that we did back in the old days, boleros.
Yeah, you can turn them into...
And I'm going to convert them to salsa and do it my way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But with class music, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to show them that this Tejano will not conform to that mierda, and I'm not going to. And if I can take my people, my Chicano people, because there are so many hip Chicanos like you and I, you know, we're diverse in our,
yeah,
our love for music. You know, you could go in and really appreciate the Little Joe, or you could appreciate Paulino, or you could appreciate anybody as well as
el
you
gran
can.
Gran Combo.
El Gran Combo, anybody, no? I believe, como Johnny Hernandez me dijo la otra noche, in our discussion, see, we're the same age, we're 48. But we kind of grew up together in La Onda. We saw the best of it. We were the top dogs.
Yeah.
And Johnny was saying, I've not appreciated him for my 30 years that I spent in La Onda and the beautiful recording.
Well, he was always walked in the shadow of Little Joe to begin with. And so.
Yes, unfortunately. And he's a better singer than Joe.
Yeah, he is.
Will ever hope to be. You know what I'm saying? And more talented. He's a great writer, composer. But you know what it is? We've outgrown that también. Not that we have outgrown it, we've been pushed away. The radio DJs, the record producers, they pushed us out. And they say, okay, come on, young kids.
Yeah.
You know, let's...
Well, they always think of music as the way most producers do. This music is for the younger generation. Older people don't buy it. And it's true, apparently, or they think it's true. That whether it be deodorants, right, or music or clothes, you know, you aim it at a certain age.
Don't you still go to the dances on Baile Tejano?
Well, if it's good music, I don't, you know, if I could go hear, you know, Tortilla again, I'd go.
Sure, of course. Yeah. To some extent, Johnny feels that he's outgrown it. And I said, well, maybe you're right.
I happen to love salsa too, so.
Right. Well, you know, my feeling is, though, that there's a time and a place for everything. And right now, people are listening with their eyes. And then, as a musician, I listen to Joe Posada, the sax player from San Antonio. He does some beautiful things on the sax, and he's a great musician. And he has conformed to sounding mediocre, mm-hmm, like the rest of the, you know. It's all on a personal desire. What do you want to be?
Yeah.
You know. It's funny, you know, El Güero Volcas.
Who's that? That's name
from... El Güero Dávila. The San Antonio.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
He's already labeled me, el cabrón. Me dice el Tejano Salsero.
El Tejano Salsero.
Which is, you know, nobody, there's no Tejano ever.
That's cool.
That's got into the onda Tejana, out of the Tejano into salsa. First of all, they can't feel it because nothing is on the one. Everything's on the end.
Right.
El tumbado de bajo, yeah, te manda, mm-hmm, la jodida también. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Johnny Hernandez, okay, just got back from Germany. He was doing the tour in Germany. And he goes, hey, I got up to sing con Larry Harlow, one of those great salsa acts out of New York. You know, they were doing la cumbia, they were doing la bamba, but they were doing it salsa, and I could never get right on it. I couldn't sing it, you know, because it was on the, nothing was on the one, and I finally got it at the end, like, yeah, right, at the end. Yeah. Okay, Johnny. But you know what the funniest thing in the world is? That one of the greatest musicians in my band is a bass player that played with me in La Onda Tejana con Tortilla. My name is Jody Orona. He's from Odessa. This guy's a great player in jazz, lo que sea. Cuando lo metí a la onda de salsa, you know, he couldn't do it.
It's not that hard. I mean, I've tried playing bass on the salsa, and it seems to have come easy to me, but I don't know.
Well,
I wouldn't try it right now, but I've done it, and it's not that difficult.
Es que you might have the feel for it. It's a total, it's a feel, it's the feel. And this guy, it was so funny because he stayed here for 2 weeks trying to learn, and all he was doing was holding the band back. And I got the message from the musical director, because I have a guy that writes and arranges for me and directs the band. I just sing, and I get the bookings and do the PR and all that stuff, right? And I went a couple of days before he went back to Odessa, llegué a buscarlo como a las 8 de la mañana. Y entré y te estaba quedando con su roommate y le dije, hey, ¿dónde está Jody? Me dijo, hey, you mean One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? Le dije, ¿por qué? Digo, pues mira, está todo despeinado. Y practicing, and he can't get it. Y tiene como cuatro paquetes de cigarras, dos cafeteras y chinga. Y es night and day, y no puede aprender. Dice, por favor, déjalo que se vaya. So, you know, it was funny, because this guy's a great musician. And he never could get the whole.
I'm amazed that he didn't get it.
Pero este, I don't know.
It's not that complicated, I mean.
Well, you got to remember that your credentials in music are...
Yeah, but it just doesn't seem to me like it's that out of reach for any, you know, good musician.
Este...
Syncopation is
you know what I would like to...
Once you get that feel that, you know, it's the bass is basically, what is it, 1, 2, 3,
yeah, yeah, it's tumbao, you know.
With a few little things.
You know, getting back, because I really would like for you to research this thing about what happened to our richest pioneers, to our most beautiful trendsetters, which they were, you know, Isidro, the living people. We're talking about Tony La Rosa, Paulino, Eloy is alive?
Eloy Bernal. Sure. Well, they're in the Christian ministry.
When ever, El Charro Negro, he was in La Onda for 20 years. Well, the one and only, no, Negrito. Known internationally.
Unless Armando Peña can be considered a national. I don't know if you know who Armando Peña is.
Hey, he's a great friend. Are you kidding? Que bárbaro.
Es el negro, el cabrón.
Pachujón. Let's get serious about this thing.
Great baterista, by the way, Armando
Peña. Of course, you know.
And he couldn't read a note, but he had this uncanny ability just, you know, to pick up whatever the orchestra was doing and do it right along with him.
René Sandoval doesn't read.
I can't believe that.
This man is a genius, no? He's just a born genius. Luis Bustos doesn't read. Okay?
Well, how could they sit there with the bands and play along with them?
Because they, you know, they're spiritual. They really, you know, they got something... Parte de Diositos right
extra
sense. Mira, yo y Charro nos invitaron a esa cosa de Tejano Awards, and we declined. Nos querían dar un award of appreciation for what?
So you didn't accept it?
You know, for what? This is a real world. There's money involved.
Oh, yeah, well.
We trae la tortilla factory, we'll give you $500, cantan unas dos canciones, we'll give you a motel. And they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, they do.
You know, and then my question to this guy was, well, where's Isidro? You know, is Paulino Bernal going to be there, or maybe Tony La Rosa, or
Well, Juan Tejeda has done his own thing over there, recognizing all of, I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Of course.
Junto Festival Tejano.
But this is a fiasco, man. This is a fiasco. What has Selena or Ram Herrera or these guys done for La Onda? What have they really done?
They have...
they brought it down to mediocrity.
Yeah, they have turned it into a kind of... Especially Selena, into a kind of MTV, you know, sexy acts kind of thing.
Aren't we talking about basics here? The Grand Ole Opry, they still consider like some of the old... A national treasure. Some of the... Roy Acuff. All these people that... ¿Cómo se llama guitarrista? Chet Atkins. They're not on the MTV or the hit parade, none of this, but they are trendsetters that made things happen. They brought the music, like you said, from Beto Villa to Isidro, to Sonny, to Little Joe, to Tortilla, to Latin Reed, and they have done that, but none of that happens there. That's all a money, greedy thing that's done that has given a bad black eye to La Onda Tejana. Because if you want to have Tejano Awards in appreciation. How about let's go back with the guys that made it happen?
Yeah.
That didn't happen there. Torpeña didn't happen. And so that's my feeling on that, you know. I feel that the new thing that's going to happen is that this thing is going to go on and go on until it blows itself out. And it'll blow out eventually. And if there's anybody that's any good in La Onda Tejana today, they will eventually get out into something better. Como La Mafia, their musicianship, I'm going to say, is still very mediocre. But they're becoming big stars in the eyes of the Mexican public now, not Los Tejanos.
Right.
They're into Mexico, and with the little girls and the little kids and that stuff. Sonny Ozuna was on American Bandstand. National, international. Yeah.
30 years ago.
Little Joe is still there, but Little Joe...
He's like an icon from the past.
It's hard to say what Joe's at. I don't know where he's at.
Really?
Well, he can never. Joe's not a country singer.
I'm going to let you